Around 50,000 Irish people are living illegally in the USA. They may call that country home, but they don't have the papers entitling them to reside there. They daren't leave for fear that they wouldn't be allowed to return again. Many of the undocumented Irish emigrated 30 years ago in the 1980s. Many of the friends and family members they left behind are getting on. But a visit home to see a loved one for the last time is impossible if you're undocumented. A new bipartisan immigration reform bill now before the US Senate could improve the status of undocumented Irish people in the US. One of its main drivers is Kieran Staunton, president of the Irish Lobby for Immigration Reform, and he joins me now in studio. Kieran, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Just fill us in, first of all, on your own background. What brought you to the USA and what did you do there to make a living?
Well, I don't think there's enough time in the show to go back to Lewisburg County, Mayo, 1963. But however, the significance is that, well, I found myself undocumented or illegal in 1982 in Boston. I suppose I was ahead of the groups coming in. After that, probably about 50, 60, 70,000 people arrived. As you remember, the unemployment lines were huge and the only option was get out. I think the foreign minister at the time, the late and great Brian Lenihan, said the island's not big enough for all of us, so get rid of them. And fortunately, in many things, we passed a number of pieces of legislation. As you probably know, the 1965 Act in US Congress locked the Irish out permanently, and the only way over there was to head over on a ticket. And because when we arrived in 82, there were no undocumented or legal Irish before us, so there was no one to show the first group that arrived how to get a driver's license and a bank account and a social security number and how to fill in forms. However, we got all that done and people arrived and we got a piece of legislation passed by the Congressman Brian Donnelly at the time.
The Donnelly visa.
Donnelly visas. Many of them got them. And I think at the time was disappointing. We were lobbying for the Donnelly visas and two senior members of the then coalition government, I forget who it was, arrived in Washington to say, oh, there's no immigration issue. Ireland's booming. This was 1986. However, we did get that through. But what happened was the Donnelly visas had a fairly tight number. The amnesty at the time in 86 cut off in 84. So we were left with 60,000 people out of status, out of country. So we went back and we said, OK, we've got to do something else. And the fatalists amongst us said, oh, it'll never happen again. You got the Donnelly, you'll never do it. And we got a congressman actually called Bruce Morrison, who wasn't Irish-American, who was locked out of the Irish embassy because he was came to Ireland and was listened to his conscience and met with all the parties rather than go by the official script. And he was on the Judiciary Committee and we met with him. We drove up from Boston and met with him and said, here's what we're looking for. And he put it together and we got the Morrison visas. Following up on that, we got Schumer visas and various visas. But what we've never gotten, and that's what brings us to today on the two issues, is that we don't have legal access to the states like other countries. And one of the things we've done in this bill, Neil O'Dowd and myself, and we've said is, first of all, this is our fourth decade of campaigning on illegals.
Explain what happened in 1965. Explain about this.
What happened in 1965 was Senator Kennedy at the time and President Johnson said, we discriminate in favour of Europeans. So we want to find a way. Up to that, you had the Chinese Exclusion Act and you had various types of bad legislation that excluded people. So I said, we wanted to get rid of the quota system, even it out for everyone. Now, Irish Americans at the time said, whoa, this will not work because of what we had the nephew, then someone would sponsor someone in and all you had to do was write, be a good character for them for a couple of years. And Irish Americans rallied that time. They got a commitment from the Speaker, from the Senator, that there'd be a set aside for the Irish so that the Irish had a quota of 17,000 a year. So Tip O'Neill, and there's a great interview by Tip O'Neill in Irish American Magazine in 1986, where he said, we did it already. We were having a set aside for the Irish community. The Irish embassy came to us and said, we don't want a set aside. We don't want any more people leaving Ireland. We prefer it to be closed. So the Irish embassy at the time in Washington.
Not the first or the last time that you had been messed about by Irish authorities, but it's been.
What I would say is it would be a start of consistency.
Yeah. Okay, give us a case study or perhaps a few case studies about how people's lives are affected if they are undocumented and they are living in the USA and they, as you say, they have a driver's license, they have a social security, but what they can't do is they can't come home.
Well, and what you had probably with the ones prior to 9/11, people could come and go quite a bit. People were back and forth, easy enough to do. After September the 11th, they now know when you leave the country. And the other thing that happened is a piece of legislation that was signed into law by Bill Clinton in 1996, which stated that if you overstayed your visa for 3 months over the 90 days, that you faced a 3-year bar. If you stayed over a year, you had a 10-year bar. So that means any people who risk coming home for a funeral or a wedding, or that if they were stopped at the airport, they faced a lifetime or 10-year bar, which is a life. So people with American children, which most of them have, would then be in a position of they came home for a family event and they were locked out from a family event. So that is in the last number of years what has happened, that this has come down. Now, what has happened since the Tiger, I don't know what he did, but he or she disappeared, we've had another huge number coming in. I mean, not probably as many as have gone halfway around the world to Australia. But what we have said, and it's doing well here, when we were trying to get the Kennedy-McCain Act through, we were saying, Neil and I said, listen, we need to get legal access to the states. We cannot keep doing this. And we fought an uphill battle. And finally, it was a Jewish senator from Brooklyn who Neil and I met with at some length and said, OK, the next time there's immigration reform, we're going to create a legal avenue to America for Irish people, because every other country, it's not that we're ever looking for what everyone else hasn't. We're actually looking for what everyone else has.
So it's essentially restitution for for legislation that was passed almost 50 years ago.
And Ted Kennedy himself said, the last hearing before he died, actually, on immigration, said, we set out to finish discrimination against countries. We ended up discriminating against Ireland.
OK, tell me about the bill that you and Neil are essentially sponsoring. You
know? Yeah, which is irony, is the fact that in all the years you've had the great Irish names in the Senate and Congress, the Tip O'Neills and the Kennedys, not one of them ever addressed this issue on the floor. Not one of them. Mm. All the Friends of Ireland, the St. Patrick's Day statements, all of this will never address. No Taoiseach, no ambassador has ever addressed the fact that we've been locked out. No one has ever actually stood up and said, why is it? But we've done it, and we met with Senator Brooklyn. Brooklyn, congressman originally, Jewish guy, great friend of the Irish communities, GA and otherwise, said, what do we need to do? So we said, well, here's the deal Australia got. 10,000 visas a year, forever, an e-visa. There you go. We want the same. When we want, the only difference is the Australian requirement is a degree. And we said, we don't want the degree. We don't want to be like an issue where it's an elitist visa. Mm. We want the people who, whether they come out
of... Because, I mean, if you have a degree, you can already go to the States and you can work for a year or 2 years anyway.
So it's an elitist type of thing. So we said, no, it's either the fact that a carpenter or a waitress or... Like, there was this thing some years ago that everyone coming out of Ireland had a degree. My argument back with diplomats, well, then why have you got FOSS courses and all these various courses and building sites and people working, electricians and training as bricklayers and all the others? So it has to be a standard that they can get into the country. So the bill we have now would give 10,000 visas a year. It's already passed the Senate.
OK, and this is a specific bill. This is separate from the immigration legislation.
No, it's part of the whole thing. So when we vote, this came voted out of the Senate. Mm. It was attempts to kill it as part of the bill, and we pushed back that. So this is passed the overall bill. There are three major bites in the apple, if not four, for Ireland in this big bill. One, it will legalise all the Irish over there, right? Two,
and that's a problem, because that's a problem with a lot of Republicans.
Well, it's a bit of a problem. It's not as big of a problem as the hand-wringers will often say. It's how it's spent out.
But we'll it creates a precedent for legalising 10,000 Latinos.
Well, no, it's a one bill, it's one for all. Hmm. So when we say we all work together on this, there's one bill that will legalise everyone in the country, path to citizenship. Right, long term, you have to prove you have a good record, and if you're bad, you won't get it, and it'll take a while, but that's fine. Pay a fine. So we're all on the one on that. The second part for Ireland will be 10,000 visas a year forever. I mean, this is a major thing in US Irish foreign policy. If you want, this is the first time something like this has been happened. And third, there are other aspects of the immigration bills that will allow for other people coming from Ireland, coming from all other countries.
Okay, it's passed.
There's three big bites out of the apple for Ireland in this.
It's passed the Senate, but that was, well, I'm assuming it would be a problem, but the big problem is the House of Representatives, isn't it?
There is a bit of a problem in the House of Representatives, and the fact that Republicans control it. Now, we're lucky enough, we in the Irish-American community have a good working relationship with Republicans in the House. We've always had, because one great thing, when Neil and I have worked on the peace process and everything, we've never taken a partisan view of it. it takes two to tango in any house. So we have a good relationship. And if you look, and we have access to, if you give me any Congress member in any number around the country, I can tell you what percentage of Irish in his state or her state. We have met with them. We have worked very well with.
Does that cut any ice, though? I mean, is the notion of an Irish vote is that an illusion at this stage?
No, it's only an illusion if you don't make it work. So if you look at any of these, if you give me any state, any constituency of those Republican, we'll say there are 230 in the House. We know we need to get 120 of them odd to vote to pass the Republican majority, not just the House, because that's their own test. They want a majority of the majority. But if you go into any place, and we'll just pay South Carolina. We have an AOH leader in South Carolina who's probably one of the best guys you've ever met.
It's the Ancient Order of
Hibernians. Ancient Order of Hibernians. He has met with every Republican congressman in his district in the last 3 months. That's what we have organised with them. If you go into Ohio, 15 out of the 18 Congress members are Republicans. Our leaders in Ohio, John Myers from Cleveland, and that he's an AOH leader there. He has also done similar in Pennsylvania. So it's not just numbers. So we're saying is, wherever they are, we have an organisation. Take, for instance, we have great meetings with the Gaelic Players Association. They have branched out. They have a lot of networks out there. The GAA in North America, they actually have, and they're one of those untold great success. The great thing about the GAA is they just do things. Mm. I can call any area in North America where there's a GAA, some team, and I'll say, I need three or four people to call Congressman X, get a meeting with them. It doesn't go through committees, it's done. So we can go into any of those areas. Like last week, for instance, there was 12 members of Congress came to Ireland. 10 of them were Republicans. Now, we didn't know that. No one contacted us until after they had left, which was a bit of a faux pas. Someone was asleep at the wheel. But we could give I could give you a background on every one of them 10. Two of them, one of them is Meehan, great Irish-American guy. I've met him 10 times. We can give you how many AOH divisions, how many GAA divisions, how many meetings that we had with these groups.
So you're doing the groundwork.
Well, we've already done the groundwork. Right. See, when Kennedy McCain failed in a few years ago, a lot of people folded their tents. We didn't. We stayed on the hill. We kept the things going. We knew we'd be back. And we kind of said at the time, Bainwich or Asherish. And Thomas Clear or Asherish in numbers.
What are the stumbling blocks in the way of legislation? What are the things that you need to clear out of the way before this is going to happen?
The leadership, we have met with all the leadership on the Republican side. Paul Ryan, who ran for
Vice President,
great fella, was mad to come back to see the All-Ireland hurling final, as long as Kilkenny were in it, because his people were there. So that's another story. We are having him come into an event we are having on the Hill shortly. Boehner, Speaker, great fella, comes from Cincinnati, is very much wants to get this done. All of the leadership wants to get it done because there's two big issues. Republicans know they cannot win the White House without this.
Also particularly without Latino support.
Yes, but also they are now realising that they may not be fit to hold on to the House if they kill this. Now, that's getting personal. Some of them may not care about the White House, but down the level you're talking about committee chairs and you're talking about perks, and well, I won't say mercs and perks, that's dated, but there's perks. And what's happening at the moment is that most of them are saying, we need, like Peter King, for instance, who was a great friend of ours over the years, was very much opposed to us on this 5 or 6 years ago. We had a meeting with him just over a month ago. He wants to get this done. He knows.
We talked about the attitude of the government towards all of this in the past. And, there's a notion that it's not good from a governmental point of view to have to go cap in hand to a foreign power, albeit the foreign power, and say, we are leaking people. Can you please take them in? So what kind of help are you getting from the government? What kind of help would you expect from the Irish ambassador, from the Irish embassy?
Well, first of all, let me say, and oftentimes, your foreign affairs people, I think you had a show, Yes Minister, and some of them are still cap in hand.
It was on a rival station, but the substance of it applied here as well.
Yes. So you have that, we cannot be seen to ask. Capitol Hill is America, where you stand up and you say, what the Israelis do, what any other country does. You stand up and say, here's what we're... You cannot hint. You cannot say, well, we let know our position. But you're standing up and saying, look, 3 years ago, for instance, the current ambassador who's leaving for one of Bertie's guys met with the two senior senators in Montana, gave a check for $100,000 of your money for a project out there, but never mentioned the immigration issue. And he said, and I went mad afterwards. He said, well, I was waiting for the right time. I said, well, thank God I didn't have you advising me when I first met Bruce Morrison. Now, having said that, over the years, you've had some great people. We'll say like Sean O'Higgins was a master. I don't know where he is, not just because he's from Mayo, but during the peace process, he knew how to work Capitol Hill. You have someone like Brendan Scannell, who was there during the, he wasn't an ambassador, he was a, probably considered a low-level guy at the time in the embassy, could work with Irish America, but yet knew how America worked, which is a big difference. And I've actually, the first, Anne Anderson is coming in, first woman ambassador to Washington. I've been in contact with her. I have a lot of confidence that she will lift it up, because I think we're lucky at the time as we have a Taoiseach. I would say that the, in all my dealings with Taoiseach over the years, no one understands this issue better than it, when he was in
the
Kenny.
Your fellow county man.
Yes, I'll say that too, but it doesn't stop me from fighting with him for the last 20 years because he's been wrong on a lot of issues. But on this, he doesn't need training wheels. Now, I think the Minister for Foreign Affairs certainly needs training wheels. The last minister, the last Labour member I met on the immigration issue was Tánaiste Dick Spring.
That's going back a bit.
Yeah, so that's when you say on that issue, but currently, and I'll tell you, for instance, is the guy who's actually shining on Capitol Hill right now is a guy from Kerry, believe it or not, called Mark Daly. And I didn't realise when I came home here yesterday that he was involved in a partisan bit of scuffle. So twice I had said to people I'd met with, Mark Daly from Kerry, he's a senator, he's done a great job, he's on the Hill. And each of them used a different expression to him other than senator.
So he's some hiding.
Some we won't use on the air.
He's hiding his light under a bushel on that topic.
But let me tell you something. That when he came to Capitol Hill and he has used his Shannon the paperhead, he is the first spokesman any party in Ireland has for the diaspora. He's the first spokesman ever for the diaspora from his party, which I forget his name. But instead of people saying, wow, isn't that wonderful? How do we get behind him? The first number of people did was kick the legs under him. I said, listen, someone said he was an opportunist. I said, give me 10 more opportunists. Give them to me in Capitol Hill for 2 months. I don't care what party they wear or what hat, because over the years, we'll say, regardless of what party was in, the last government, you had people like Michael Ring, John Cregan and those guys, and Sean Crow. They came out quite a bit. But we always told them, you leave your party politics at water's edge. So once you get on Aer Lingus, you're an elected representative of Ireland, not of party.
Can I get very personal just for a few minutes at the end of this interview? You're a campaigner. One of the things that you campaigned for was Rory's regulations. Explain to me what Rory's regulations and the circumstances in which you lost your little boy.
Well, I don't think we have enough time to go back into all of it. Our son, our hero, died, and his sister Kathleen is out there in the studio with us 2 years ago from it, something we'd never heard of, sepsis. We didn't know what sepsis was. Orla and I never heard of it. He was dead. It is now the largest, we have found out, is the largest killer of children in the world. The largest kid, I mean, it's hit home here in Ireland recently.
Yeah, it's a bit of hell of an hour.
And people need, every doctor today needs to check. Every parent knows when there's something, you check a number of things. Orla checked Rory for meningitis. You know, you checked. Now we know that not alone should a doctor check for meningitis, they should check for sepsis.
It is part of a set of regulations.
It is. Governor Cuomo in New York is the first government in the world to pass regulations in memory of Rory Staunton. Now that will save 8,000 to 10,000 New York lives a year. Right? If Rory's regulations were nationwide, I'm going to Germany next week to launch the sepsis awareness in Germany, because the UN has still not actually even got their head around it. We hope to have hearings in Washington in the fall. We've met with the President. I spoke to President Obama about this. He's a parent. Orla spoke to Vice President Biden. He himself buried a child. We cannot bring our hero back, but no parent's mouth should actually have to buy a coffin. No parents, no little girl should have to bury her brother. And this is totally preventable. And all it takes is a couple of little signs to look for. And as Orla said on one of your colleagues' programme, sepsis is very easy to find if you're looking for it. We have set up the Rory Staunton Foundation. We will campaign to make sure that no one ever has to do the torture. People come back to see their relatives. They come back to see their parents. We come back to see our son, to see his grave, and chat to him. No one should. I mean, this is totally preventable. And it's not alone does it not cost a nickel, but the US government people figure it will save America $16 billion a year. So when you look at it in those figures, it's killing more Americans than AIDS. It's killing Irish people. Poor Liam down in Cork, wonderful boy dead the same day as Rory. Mm. Didn't have to. I mean, you're talking about people who are going into hospitals like our son and being released. No one checked for sepsis. No parent, I mean, in New York, there'd be regulations about no child can be let out of the hospital until his bloods are cleared. But that should be for anyone. I mean, to you, you would think, well, isn't that normal?
Mm.
Well, it was, but until we know sepsis. So yeah. when a parent are going in and a doctor or a paediatrician, they need to think, oops, I've looked everything else. I've ruled out meningitis, but I haven't looked for sepsis. Because the sepsis, once they get the blood and they can tell the white count, they can tell straight away, there's something wrong here. And that's, I mean, we have nothing else to do. We cannot bring our hero back. And people have sent us emails from all over the country how our campaign has saved their son or saved their daughter. And I think Kathleen said it best when she got the first one, email back. Why didn't someone do this for Rory?
Mm. Well, that's a question, I suppose, that you're never going to be able to answer and that you don't really, I suppose, also want to address. You, I had the pleasure of meeting you in San Francisco about 7 or 8 years ago. You were a campaigner then.
Yes.
You are a campaigner now, and this is a fantastic campaign. And thank you very much for coming in.
Well, thank you. And what we will say is that hopefully after this immigration bill gets through that people won't have to fly half around the world to get jobs because they'll be fit to go to New York 5 hours away. The people who couldn't come home will be fit to come home for their gatherings, and that everyone in Ireland in a couple of years' time will be sepsis aware and sepsis free, and that no one else will have to go through the torture Orla and I and Kathleen Levitt. So thank you very much.
Kieran Staunton, thank you.